to be together, every day together, always. I really feel that I'm losing my best friend. I can't believe this could be the end. It looks as though you're letting go, and if it's real, well, I don't want to know. Don't speak, but notice what you said. So please stop explaining. Don't tell me, 'cause it hurts.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to All Elite Geekly, the show where we chat about anything geek, and then eventually we talk about AEW Dynamite. We're your hosts, I'm Boris, and I am joined by Dexavier Josiah Dax. How's it going?
Hey, what's good, wrestling fans? I am back. I am rejuvenated. My voice is back. Good. My energy is back. I don't know how the hell I got back, but here we are, ready to talk about possibly one of the most embarrassing episodes of Dynamite ever.
You know what? Let me correct this. One of the most embarrassing episodes of professional wrestling I've seen, and we watched WCW. We watched.
I was about to say, you sure about that? You really want to say the most?
I'm not saying the most. One of the
it's,
most.
It's ranging.
It's up there.
It's up there. In that level.
Yeah, it's up there. You know, here's the thing. I was thinking earlier today how we're going to like approach some of this conversation and stuff, because I try not to be negative, right? I always try to find that silver lining in all of this. But and this saying comes, you know, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's the show, folks. Later. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
But Dax, before we get into wrestling, before we get into all of that, a couple things I do want to bring up. Number one, we're going to touch something wrestling right now, and that's the Hawaiian sumo legend Aki Bono passing away at the age of 54. We were talking about this right before we started. Man, it's so sad, like, especially if you kind of know more than his North American appearances on television.
Yes. I had the pleasure of actually watching him in his Bob Sapp match in Japan, and some of his fights in Japan, and then him, of course, being at WrestleMania against the Big Show. That was, you know, very famous for a lot more reasons than most. But we also seen him in Ring of Honor as well. He's made his appearances in indie, you know, in indie shows and whatnot. But what's even sadder about the legacy of Aki Bono is that he didn't remember it when he left. And a lot of that is because he had dementia. Well, I didn't know what form of dementia. For those who don't understand and know, I used to work for the Alzheimer's Association for 10 years. Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, but it's not the dementia. Dementia comes in different forms. I don't know to which he had, but at the same time, it all leads to loss of memory and, you know, forgetfulness and stuff like that. And one of the worst things that I've had to experience, I got to meet some great people who had early onset dementia and, you know, Alzheimer's and all the stuff. And I've seen them decline. And it's like the saddest thing ever, especially if you, one of the guys that I actually met was one of the Tuskegee Airmen. And you have that legacy and you live a long life, and we do what we do, and we want to keep these memories that we have. And all of a sudden you get Alzheimer's, and all that you worked for, all that hard that you worked for, is just deteriorating away. You're declining almost back in reverse. Like some would say Benjamin Button in a lot of ways. It's real. It is so real. It is something that I think we all need to educate ourselves in. And it's something that you, even if you got an enemy in the world, you would not want to wish your worst enemy for it. Because you want all those memories to be there. You want all those lessons to be learned. You want to, you know, the joy in life is not money. The joy in life is experience.
Yep.
And if you lose those experiences, it is something, money doesn't cure it.
Yep.
When I heard he lost that, I was like, he's done so much. So he has such an adventure in life. And it always, you know, and he's not the first guy in the combat sports to lose to dementia. We've had many for people who lost, in some tragically, mind you. And it's just really always sad to hear of him. But at least we could keep his and others' memories alive. And that's how immortality is usually made. Yep. And it's up to us to keep those memories, even if he couldn't do it himself.
Exactly. There you go. I think you said it perfectly. It's always sucks seeing someone that you like have seen and all that just pass away, and then hearing about, you know, kind of their state at the end. It always tugs on that heartstring. It's a reminder that, you know, all the bullshit that we see on TV, it's just that, it's bullshit. There's just so much more to it. And we need to always remember that. Dax, awesome. Well said. All right, let us chat and geek out a little bit. And
let's cheer it up.
You've been chomping at the bit to talk about some X-Men 97. And before you start talking about that, just remember, I've seen these. I still haven't rewatched it. The only time I watched it was with the screener from Disney. And this is getting universally praised as the best episode, or one of the best episodes of all of animated comic adaptions.
Well, here's the thing. I would rephrase that. I would just say the greatest X-Men episode ever made up at this point, because you've seen the next episode after this. I have not, but hands down, this is the greatest thing since Morph. At the very first episode, I'm still catching up, because I stopped watching X-Men after the third or fourth season, because it just went everywhere. But I haven't even seen when Xavier passed at the end. To me, this, the way it was written, the way it was done, the little Easter eggs that we've seen in this, it was how it ended. Man, this was amazing. Blew my mind.
Yep. A lot of people didn't like the previous episode because it was too Jubilee-centric, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, screw y'all. I love that episode.
Oh, I know you did. I did too. But, you know, for everyone who kind of complained about that episode, they're like, oh, they made up for it this episode. And it's like, you know what? That's what this show is going to do. They're going to focus on
that episode was a filler episode. I'm fine with that. It was a fun filler episode. I'm cool.
It was the filler episode before we get real. Because trust me, Dad.
Yes.
We're getting real right now.
Oh, God, did we ever.
Question for you. We're not going to name names. What do you think of this weird love triangle thing going on?
I loved, because now we have two. We got the original.
Yep.
You know, that we know too. And then this other one just pops up. And I'm into it just as much. I mean, this is what X-Men was all about. Like, if you read the comics, this is what is custom with X-Men. There's always little triangles. There's, you know, in the Jim Lee and Chris Claremont. And I know I've said Scott Williams before, but Scott Williams is the anchor. Going back now, Scott Williams is the anchor. Is Chris Claremont is the writer. When he wrote the stories for the Jim Lee's version of X-Men, we saw these triangles. It wasn't just Jean and Wolverine. It was also Cyclops and Psylocke, if you remember that. There was that little issue going. Like, there's always some like crazy drama going on within the deals and there stuff like that. So this latest one played in perfectly with it. I always enjoy it, because that's the theme of the X-Men. You know, this is the human side of the X-Men. You know, drama happens within the team.
Yeah, exactly. They live together. They live in close quarters together. This is going to happen. Have you ever watched Big Brother? This is what happens.
That's exactly what it is, basically, in a nutshell.
Have you ever heard stories about boarding schools?
Yep, there you go.
So there you go. Man, yeah, so X-Men, it's so freaking good. Again, I know I've said this before, but what I love the most about it is the fact that X-Men is back. All right, like, I kind of feel like we're going back to the good old days, for lack of a better term, where the X-Men were like the top echelon of Marvel.
Yeah. Now, it's that plus. I mean, like, they reminded us of why we love the X-Men, and on top of that, Studio Mir, who is doing the animation for this show and really showing their ass. How beautiful this show looks like. It doesn't look like the 90s version. It looks like an 80s classic cartoon. And in the 80s, we had G.I. Joe, we had Jim and the Holograms, we had Transformers, we had Thundercats, all beautifully animated shows. And then the 90s kicked in, and then like you saw, you could tell they were budgeting. And as much as we love the X-Men animated series, it was lacking that animation quality that we wanted to see. This is
quality over or quantity over quality in the 90s.
Yes. And now we're seeing, you know, quality over quantity because we only get 10 episodes of this and we're chomping at the bits for more now as a result. But it's expensive to do. Studio Mirror is not a cheap company. If you go to their website and see their lineup and resume of stuff that they did from the Boondocks to like various animes to Avatar, like, no.
The Boondocks is still one of my favorite freaking cartoons. Like, it is so good.
It's it will go down as probably one of the greatest black animated series of all time.
100%. 100%. Such a good show. Such a funny little series and weird, wacky series the Boondocks was.
Ewan McGregor was a genius. He was a genius.
Oh, 100%. There was something that I wanted to bring up, and I completely just forgot right about it.
Can we talk about the little elephant in that episode?
Yeah, something that you brought up.
Yeah. So, and I'm pretty sure people have picked it up by now, but like the minute I saw it, my artist Hawkeyes looked at it in the very scene before everything popped off on that episode. If you look into the sky, you saw the Watcher looking down at everything in his very ways. And I'm having this discussion on Threads right now with people who may not believe this, but I truly think that this is the sign that this is connected to the MCU. It is very possible in some form or fashion. If you look at the signature is the Marvel Animation signature, also has scenes from What If. And I could be very wrong at this, and I hope I'm not. But if I am, that's fine. But this, it can't be a coincidence that they're now, because that animated, if I'm correct, that signature wasn't there for the first few episodes. Am I right? It just popped up like later on in like episode 3 or 4.
It was, I don't know if it was the signature that you're seeing now.
Yeah. But it all of a sudden pops up and it shows scenes from, you know, Marvel's What If.
Yeah, I that's what I'm thinking, man. Yeah, it's a crazy hectic morning here. But yeah, so X-Men, man, I read the comics in the early 90s when they came out, obviously, right? And I remember some of the storylines and I remember some of the major plots and twists. And at this point, I'm like, what are they going to borrow from? Where are they going to grab inspiration from for the next few episodes? And I really love that part about X-Men. It's like I know we talked about this already once, but it really is kind of like the ultimate catch-up tool. They're kind of throwing the past, you know, it's a window of about 10 years of X-Men lore in this show.
Yeah. I would say from the 80s and the 90s coverage of all the X-Men.
Yeah.
Even some X-Factor too.
Yes. Oh, good old X-Factor. Good old.
Yeah, because they made reference to that too.
Yeah, they did. They did. Oh, man. X-Factor. Hey, you know what? I got to admit, X-Factor, even in when they did the all new series Marvel, like 20?
Yeah.
Right after New 52 came out. And Marvel's like,
yeah,
damn, we should relaunch too. That seems to work. X-Factor was such a good, fun series. The one
which version of X Factor were you into? Was it the original X Men X Factor or was it the ones afterwards?
Afterwards.
When Havoc took over.
Yep.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah. Because it was wacky. It was like X Men, but more wacky.
Yeah.
Even though X Men got a little wacky again, like
I always considered it like the West Coast Avengers, but better.
West Coast Avengers. Yes.
Because, like, West Coast Avengers, like, I used to read West Coast Avengers for whatever reason possible. But West Coast Avengers was always like what we think Rampage is or Collision is in a lot of ways. But X Factor was written better and the characters were way more interesting than the West Coast Avengers themselves, which, by the way, did, for those who keep thinking that Iron Man was like one of the main top tier characters, Iron Man was the leader of that comic, which was a second tier comic.
If at all. If at all.
Didn't sell much.
Yep. I think that's another thing. I know, again, I know we're repeating ourselves, but it's just so funny. Like, the rewriting of history as it pertains to Marvel, right? And where some of these comics actually stood in the totem pole. Like I said, it's good to see X-Men back to its glory, because X-Men, Spider-Man, and basically a lot of the Fox properties were the ish for Marvel, but because they didn't couldn't use them in the MCU, you know, Marvel was kind of forced to redo things. Like, again, before 2014, no one heard about the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it'll be interesting. But, you know, again, going back to the whole watch situation, we'll see. We'll see how this goes, because people need to remember the name of this recent saga in the MCU is the Multiverse Saga. Mm-hmm. So it is extremely possible that this show is somehow connected to the MCU. It is very possible. There is no reason why not, especially when this is a company that is also owned by Disney, which also owns Lucasfilms, which also in their formula connects everything to Star Wars. Everything that is Star Wars, from the animation, from the movies, to the comics, to the video games, they're all connected. They're all canon. So it's not a far off theory to see. Again, we'll see down the line what happens, because we know that the movie is eventually going to come, and see how they base it off. But a lot of the signs, when we saw Beast on Multiverse of Madness, I'm sorry, not Multiverse of Madness, on the Marvels, when we saw Professor X, you know, in Multiverse of Madness, when we even heard, you know, the tune when they were talking about mutants in Ms. Marvel, they all fit the look and aesthetic of the animated series. So we'll see. We'll see. It's not, none of whether I'm right is concrete, or whether that whoever's denying it is concrete. We just don't know, but it may be a possibility. I'm just excited right now. I just love what they're doing with this series. And this episode right now was, this will go to hell. This is going to go down as the greatest X-Men episode to date.
Agreed. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that statement. No complaints from me there. So that is our weekly X-Men 97 chat. We're halfway through and we're just getting started, my friend. That's what I'm thinking. Alrighty. Anything else you want to geek out about? I feel like there was other stuff I wanted to talk about, but I forgot.
I don't know, except for my recovery from that WrestleMania weekend, maybe.
Yeah, you know what? We can jump into wrestling. We can jump into wrestling at this point.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, like, video game news is nothing. Everything video game-wise is coming out, like, on the 25th. And that's pissing me off. Like, I got to buy 3 different games on the 25th and then just space them out. You know, so I got that to worry. I got that to deal with. But just recovering from WrestleMania weekend was just crazy, mind you. Big thanks to you, mind you, SNME, for, you know, giving me the opportunity to check out, you know, Super Card of Honor, which was really a fun card. And I, you know what the deal is, and you noticed too, because you've gone to live events recently as well. The experience people have at a live event is so different from those who watch it on TV. Mm-hmm. And I find it weird. Fucking really weird. I don't know what it is about people who really have, like, it could be a subpar card, but people are still having more fun in the crowd than they are people are watching it at home. I don't understand that.
I equate it to baseball, right? Like, I love baseball, but I know a lot of people who absolutely loathe baseball, but they will happily go watch a game live because it's that much fun, right? Being with your friends, being there, the energy, seeing things up close and seeing how things are done and all of that, I think adds to the overall in-person experience that you don't get when you're watching it at home. And it's just different. I've seen some really shitty Raws and Smackdowns and ROH shows and whatever in the past. And I remember like having fun watching those live, but knowing in the back of my head, man, this is not a good episode of XYZ.
Yeah.
Or whatever. House shows are different. I always have fun at house shows. I always feel like if something is not being taped, it's always going to be good. But
because they could do whatever now at that point, and that's the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, quick question: did you watch the Joker 2 trailer?
Yeah, we can talk about that. I'm excited.
I'm beyond excited.
At the same time, I looked at that. So what'd you say?
I'm beyond excited.
What I do realize is that this is definitely a DC Elseworth movie.
Yes, 100%.
This movie, this is like, for those who don't know, DC Elseworth is basically another way of saying multiverse. Yep. It's not direct canon to the prime universe that DC follows itself on, or DC films will follow itself on. But this is like a different universe, a different depiction of that. But, you know, it's based around the multiverse of DC. So they call it Elseworld. That's their branding term for movies, movies based on DC characters that are not canon to the actual universe. So this is not going to be the James Gunn universe version, much like the Batman also is not going to be a direct canon of that either. That's also a DC Elseworld movie. That they're doing, that they working on. So with that said, I am excited to see what Gaga's going to be doing, and Joaquin Phoenix is like, he's going to be a rare form once again. Can he do it again? Can he get an Oscar again? That's the question.
Honestly, I think that this will tickle the fancy of people in the Academy. I think it checks off a lot of those boxes for the Academy.
Yeah. Which, again, I find this to be very hypocritical, because I mean, when this movie comes out and they do what they do, and I think they're going to do what they do, because Gaga is used to being in an Oscar winning movie. You know, she was in A Star Is Born and all this stuff with Cooper, and she's used to being in this level. But, you know, the conversation about like, is comic book movie cinema, which is a ridiculous conversation to have, mm-hmm. especially if your name is Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. You know, it boggles me that they're having this conversation. Like, it's all about, does the story gravitate you? And then they're aiming at the wrong people. Don't aim at the studios that make it. Aim at the fans that love it. I'm sorry. If we love a story and compelling story that has special effects or whatever, that's fine. How about make a movie that compels us? If you make a movie with a great story, with great characters that we want to see, bring it. It's not just about special effects, because we've seen special effects movies before that, that, you know, not even DC, Marvel, whatever has made, and it didn't work. But these stories are compelling. These character developments are compelling. There's a new Zendaya movie that's coming out where she's a tennis star and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like, she's a really famous tennis star. She broke her leg. But now she's trying to coach these two guys who all of a sudden want to, they're falling for her. And it's this love triangle thing. It's basically the Wolverine and Cyclops and Jean Grey storyline dynamic to this. And I'm intrigued by this story. It looks like a great story. I may actually want to go to see this, mm-hmm. but it's all about the story. Like, just make a great, don't worry about what special effects, what budget they make. There were movies on the Oscars that won that had a lower budget. Just make a damn movie. Just make a great story. Don't worry about the fact that it's a comic book movie. Don't try to label it. Don't try to make excuses. Just do it, man. Like, and this is going to be one of those, the Joker 2 is going to be one of those cases. Like, if this thing wins another Oscar, but it's a comic book based movie, what are we going to say now?
Exactly. That's exactly it. There's nothing that they can't say, right? There's nothing that they can't say. There's nothing that they can complain about. Like, I don't know. I just don't get, I just don't understand what the hate is on the comic book genre. At the same
especially
time,
the fact
you
that
have executives from Kung Fu Panda basically saying, they don't understand why Hollywood and the Hollywood like producers, studios can't fathom how and why anime is so popular.
Right. Exactly. And again, these are all the people. I feel like because on top of that, the funny part is like when you're talking down about, you know, these genres, some of these genres consist of people that you're hiring, that you're casting, yeah, that has won awards, that are Oscar winners. Robert okay. Like, yeah, right. No more than that. Like of all the biggest examples, mm-hmm, but outside of that, it's like, what is the point? And he was on Howard Stern, I think a year or two back when Scorsese first mentioned that superhero, you know, movies are not cinema. And he questioned Scorsese's theory on that. Why? You know, I don't get it. But I always find that everybody who does that, with the exception of Gwyneth Paltrow for some reason, everybody who's done that are normally, commonly, people who have not been casted in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Jennifer Anistons, the Scorsese's, I forgot the other director that was also added to that as well. But a lot of these guys, it just feels very sophomoric, if you will, in a sense that, like, you know, you back in the day when you're kids and, you know, or even a teen, and you find out that, like, your friends are having a party or a group of your peers is having a party and they didn't invite you and the party seemed to be dope and you wanted to come out here, but then you, because you weren't invited, you kind of be like, you kind of like kind of throw shade on it in a lot of ways. I feel like that's what it feels like is happening when you hear people like this do it. It's like they weren't invited to the family reunion. They weren't invited to the barbecue. They weren't invited to the party. And they kind of throw a shade on it because they weren't there. Now, mm-hmm, if they were there and they talk about it, that's a whole nother thing. But a lot of these guys were not casted ever to be in these damn films.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. There you go, man. All right, let us jump into wrestling. I do have a hard stop for some meetings for El Day Job. Yeah, man, let us chat some professional wrestling. Let us jump. You know what? AEW. You know what the part that pisses me off the most about this week is you could have ridden on the coattails of WrestleMania and the hype that WrestleMania brought and just had an excellent, awesome show. You have wrestlers and talent like Mercedes Moné, Will Ospreay, Adam Copeland, Okada, and others, and you could have made this a stacked, amazing card. But These were the takeaways from my show. CM Punk, Triple H, and the Rhodes versus a Samoan.
Enough said. that's pretty much the highlights and the bullet points of this whole entire episode. And it sadly wasn't Swerve and Samoa Joe.
That's and you know what gets to me the most? I love a good one night story. I love a story that flows through the entire show. I'm always a fan of what they did at the beginning of this show with, you know, Samoa Joe having a match and Swerve Strickland attacking him. It reminds me of, there was an episode of Raw, and I believe it was it Final Four, that throughout the entire night they tried to do this match like two or three times, and every single time Austin would like beat someone up, so they would have to stop the match and start it again. Like, I love stories like this, and this happened a lot in the Attitude, but especially in the pre-Attitude era, where there was a story that flowed through the entire night.
Exactly. And sadly, this was kind of, you know, just took a side turn.
It took a something. And I don't know, it's just like, it boggles my mind, man. It boggles my mind. Like, I am trying so hard to find a silver lining on this show, but this show single-handedly made me not give a shit about Dynasty.
Now, it here's the thing. It did, but it didn't for me. Like, I'm going to have two sides of this perspective of what he did and why. And at the end of the day, it's not good. This is algebraic, if you will. This is positive times negative equals negative at the end of the day. But I will look at both sides of that situation when we get to that point, and we'll broaden that perspective.
We're going to be talking a lot more about that. So let's just jump into the show. How does that sound, Dax?
Sounds great. Let's go.
All right, so we start the show with AEW World Champion Samoa Joe coming out. It's time for his Eliminator match against Dustin Rhodes, this rejuvenated Dustin Rhodes who has a purpose in life and has something to prove. But this match is not to happen because Swerve attacks him, and they brawl until Strickland tackles Joe through a table, and officials check on Joe. Very cool start. I really, like I said, I liked it. Then we jump to highlights of Trent Beretta turning on Orange Cassidy last week. Rene Paquette says that Cassidy's going to have a match at Rampage this week, and he's going to address the entire Beretta situation.
Now, also, was this the part where they showed the footage and everything, too?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, within that footage, here's something that's interesting to me, too. The footage shows him talking to Statlander.
Yep.
And he goes over to her. She say, what the hell's the matter with you? He whispers something. He walks away and she stops and ponders on that. I want to address last week also, because we didn't do this last week. She, when Willow was out there, she was dressed differently. Like Stat was dressed way different than normal. Uncharacteristically. I mean, she looked hot, like mind you, but it was uncharacteristically dressing different. Now, I feel like that was usually in wrestling, that's usually a means for something, you know, leading into something. And then shortly afterwards, we see that scene. So I am wondering if this is like a slow burn to something that's involving Statlander and Willow eventually. I mean, we talked about it before, which one is going to do it. And I think this may
be. It's going to be Statlander. It's looking more and more like it'll be Statlander.
Yeah. Because her dress code has changed kind of significantly, if you will.
Yep. Agreed. 100%. All right. We jump to the first and only redeeming match of the entire freaking night, which was for the TNT Championship, my opinion. Adam Copeland versus Penta El Cero Miedo with Alex Abrihantes. All right. I like this.
I really enjoyed this match. It was a very fun match. This is one of those indie matches, those indie dream matches that you see. Like Adam Copeland comes down to a certain promotion to face like the lead guy. Yeah. You know, the main guy of that promotion. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. This is one of those moments for me. And it lived up. I thought they had a great job. I felt like Copeland literally like was he adapted more to Penta's lucha style, which was really great to see. My only nitpick, cherry pick, if you will, is Penta's choice of gear, which that was a very, very Smurfish like color for me. Penta Smurf is what I called him the whole entire night. It just felt like, you know, if you play AEW Fight Forever and you know how lackluster their color selections, you know, the creative suite is, and you can only pick like one color for the
costume. Sure. Yeah, sorry.
That's what I'm like. You could not see any of the design patterns that he had in there. And this is just a design nitpick for me. But otherwise, love the match. It felt like a Penta match that Edge just happened to go with, and it worked really well. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it was, right? It shows the variety that Copeland has. It shows you how good of a wrestler Copeland is. It's something that we haven't seen from Copeland in years, right? And it's great to see that he not only can do it, for those who've never seen this side of Edge, Adam Copeland, but that he can still do it at 50-plus years of age. And you know what? You know that he's not as fast. It kind of goes to show you, right, how good of a wrestler he is. And man, if Copeland was given the, and I'm not trying to shit on WWE or anything. I understand, blah 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 blah, that you know what their style is and everything. But if Adam Copeland was able to kind of showcase his abilities a little more, what we would have seen from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Just saying a lot considering what we've already seen of him and the great matches that he's had. To take the words of Frieza from Dragon Ball, this wasn't even his final form.
Yeah. Man, having said that, Adam Copeland, like Tony Khan right now is so happy that Adam Copeland is around, or he's not happy, lucky that Adam Copeland is around. Because can you imagine if Copeland wasn't there, Moxley on vacation, what the state of AEW would be right now.
Yeah, I agreed. Absolutely agree. Because he's like literally the biggest. I mean, that's taking nothing away from Swerve and all the stuff. He's only up, but like he's, you know, Swerve, he's that established name.
He's not that exact. You said it. He's not that established.
He's that established name that they have right now. They need
rally the troops.
Yeah. And he literally is nobody else at that time, unless you count the guy that's not there that they keep bringing up. It's really, you know, keeping everybody afloat right now. And he's a great locker room leader to have right now.
Yep.
God, he's an asset way more than we know.
Yeah. Penta kicks Copeland in the corner. Copeland locks in a crossface, but Penta manages to reach the ropes for the break. Copeland hits a power slam on Penta. Then Copeland attempts a spear, but Penta avoids it. And Copeland hits Abrahantes. Penta hits code red and then snaps Copeland's arm. He goes for a springboard off the ropes. And on the turnaround, Copeland hits a spear midair for the win. And what I loved about this was that Copeland timed it so well. And it looks so deliberate as this is my thought process as opposed to something that they rehearsed a million times.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'd love to? I was looking closely. Yeah, I agree. I was looking closely at the end when they were both just laying on the ground to see if, you know, Penta was going to say something to him or vice versa, whatever like that. Like one of those moments. Because I know from Penta, like, we know Penta's story and Fennec's story. Just to be in that moment in this match with him, and it's like, man, this is a dream. This is awesome. Thank you for this. And hopefully he said it in Spanish or whatever like that. It's like, this is one of those awesome, awesome moments. Like I empathize with Penta in this situation. I really enjoyed it. I was more, you know, empathizing with Penta in this match at all, to be in this stage of his life, to be able to be in this match. And it just goes to show the good road that he's been in.
The lights go out, they come back on, and Brody King attacks Copeland after a distraction from our girl, Julia Hart. King chokes Copeland, and it's Willow Nightingale who runs down for the save. She brawls with Hart. She fights off King. Copeland fights off King, and Nightingale helps Copeland up.
It's another one. Nightingale's another one. It's like, wow, Nightingale next to Adam Copeland. Like these kids are having a great, you know, experience with this. Say what you will about AEW's current state. Like just looking at what these kids are like doing.
This is what it's so awesome. Me off, Dax. Focus on this.
Yes, agreed.
But no,
you told no lies.
We're gonna focus on Chris Jericho, Hook, and Shibata. That's what we're gonna focus on. Has Chris Jericho not had a story where he teams up with someone and eventually betrays them or gets betrayed in AEW?
No, that's exact. It's Rince, Ross, repeat, except Hook is well aware of what's going on here. And cool. I like to change up on this story.
Yeah, I don't know. It's too much. It's too much of the same for me, but
it would have been the same.
I'm willing to see it through.
Right. See where this goes. It would have been the same had Hook willingly gone with this, like Sammy Guevara has, and like other people and like the his other group did. You can't like this would insult our intelligence if Hook would just willingly go in there. And then also we got to remember Hook is Taz's son. Taz has probably told him, I have a lot of conversations about it. I like the fact that Taz on commentary is addressing some of those things. So I am liking what they're doing with this in a sense. It's not the greatest story in the world, mind you, but I do like what they're doing in a sense of like not making us look dumb for falling for the same things or like realizing like this has happened two times already. Like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And then the third time, you're just a dumbass. No, this time it's like, Hook is not falling for this at all. He's well aware. And that makes Hook look like a better character, in my opinion.
Yep. So backstage, Chris Jericho, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata chat with Renee Paquette. Jericho says he appreciates how Hook brought Shibata in, and he's listening to him. Jericho then lays out the plan for the match. Jericho says they will be successful if they listen to him. Using a translation app on his phone, Shibata asks Hook what Jericho's deal is and says that he likes Renee Paquette's necklace. Because, yeah, that's what he was looking at.
Exactly. I love Shibata, and I love when he uses that thing. It's a really funny bit.
All righty, so we are going to move on from that. Yeah, I don't have too much more to say about that, really. Like, we kind of know where this is going. I hope they kind of throw us a wrench, go left field, but they probably won't. Sometimes it's like, yeah, it's not good to swerve for the sake of swerving, you know, but yeah. Let's see exactly where this story ends up. All right, we got a video package recapping FTR's feud with the Young Bucks leading into the Tag Team Championship Tournament Finals at Destiny. Backstage, ROH World Champion Mark Briscoe and Eddie Kingston are talking about their match from Friday's Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor, where Eddie Kingston lost his ROH Championship. Adam Copeland walks in and asks them if they're good for Destiny. Willow Nightingale chimes in as well. Stokely Hathaway was on point for this, as he suggests that Willow Nightingale to fight Adam Copeland for the TNT Championship. Willow Nightingale didn't really like that, and she kind of said that they should actually team up. So Willow Nightingale and Copeland agree to team up next week against Julia Hart and Brody King.
It's so out of pocket. I love Stokely. he does no wrong. Him and Storm just does no wrong whenever they get into a segment. It's no waste of movement, no waste of motion, no waste of breath.
100%. All right, Young Bucks with the all-in footage. The Young Bucks.
This is all a waste of breath.
I know. I don't even know what to say at this point. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone has seen this, right?
Yes.
That's the thing. Everyone has seen this. Everyone knows what happened. The Young Bucks essentially say that they were at the biggest show of the year. They were distracted. That's why FTR wins. Put an asterisk on that win, and blah 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 blah. Then they show the footage for some reason, like. Dax, just go. What do you have to think? Okay. What are your thoughts?
All right. Here's my take on this. And at the end of the day, listeners, this was a dumb move. Now, we could say it's a dumb move because he should have just let it go. And he should have. Whatever Punk said in the Ariel Helwani interview, he should just let go. There are much more successful people who have been through the same situation, and they just kept it moving. And it did. Nothing. It did nothing to hurt them because they just kept moving. But with that said, here's my other side of this. The right thing to do, yes, while the right thing to do is to just keep it moving and don't address it, I want everybody to also remember that we're all humans. And each one of us has one point or another in our life has been tested by somebody who kind of put a bad name, threw shade on your name. And a lot of times we do react quickly to things or what is the word? Aggressively, I guess, to certain things, irrational to things. And all of us, there's not one of us who has not one point in their entire lives has not addressed things irrationally upon somebody trying to, say ill to their name. I get why he did this. I understand why he did this. When you are in a angry, aggressive state, a form of irrationality clicks in and you're going to react irrationally. If you're not used to handling this situation before, you're going to do stupid things. We all have. I am a big proponent of this. I matured out of it, but we're humans. So I get why he did that. And I get why he wanted to clear his name of that. I just think that he is a grown man in this stage of his life that In the profession that he's in the experience that he has, that he should know better than to put this on his main platform. Maybe a podcast, maybe just on YouTube, whatever, that's fine. Or maybe just not at all. But to put it on his platform was just like probably, it's not the worst thing in the world. It won't be hung over him over time. We live in a short attention society. We're going to forget this.
Luckily so.
And of course, maybe like a 6 months from now, maybe. And life is going to move on. But he's living in this bubble right now. And we've all lived in this bubble of irrationality where we're all proponents of doing it. And it's never the right thing to do. So again, we all agree that it's not the right thing to do. It is a dumb thing to do. But let's also realize that, you know, we're not so far off from not doing it ourselves. It's easy for us to judge this and look online and say that we wouldn't do it. It's the same thing as like, oh, I've heard this many times growing up. Like, I've heard people in my community be like, man, if I was around back in the 1800s, I wouldn't let these masters, you know, whip me and do this. Like, bitch, please. You would absolutely get your ass whipped and probably killed. You're not Django. Okay. You're not going to be able to get through that. That's just movies. Okay. I also heard if I wasn't this, you know, if I was rich, I would never do this. I would question that, because if you got an inkling of money that you could say F you to, you get this power. And I've been through this before. You get this inkling of power. You feel like you could do whatever. And it happens. It takes time to mature out of, but it happens. So we're all humans, people. We can get through this. This is a dumb thing he did. I wouldn't agree. At the end of the day, I would not trust this, but hopefully he'll learn from this and hopefully he continues. I hope he learns from this, because if he didn't, this is going to lead into some really bad times for this company. If you got a guy who just doesn't understand what he did wrong, and hopefully he does.
Well, no, I don't think he does. You know why? He doubled down.
I don't think he does right now.
He doubled down last night and started doing DMCA claims.
Yeah.
Including Ariel Helwani's page, which was funny.
Yeah.
So.
But he's still in the bubble.
But look, you're probably right. But if he had just let it go at that time,
yeah,
that would have been fine. Yeah. Like not back then. Like even last night, just aired whatever, yeah, and just that be the end of it. Cool, I could whatever. But the fact that he's now doubling down, it goes to prove your point. But
yeah,
it's just like, dude, you are just making things so much worse right now.
He's triggered by CM Punk saying he's not a good boss. I get it.
He's kind of,
but you know what the mature right, thing that we need to do, the mature thing we need to do is to keep going and proving that theory wrong.
But
it is easier to say it and harder to do sometimes. I'm just hoping like down the line, he looks back at this, and hopefully it's not too late when he looks back at this. And hopefully we could get through this, and hopefully we could see a future interview where he's like, you know, do you regret doing this? Yeah. Now looking back. Yeah. I'm hoping we could reach that point and he still has his business down, because right now this is something that wrestling fans of the 90s didn't want to see. And we're tired of seeing. We want AEW to be this new promotion, this new fresh promotion that learns from the mistakes of the past. And it was like that from 2019 to 2022. Where now we're seeing a situation again. And you can see that by Tony Schiavone's look on his face as well.
But what have I been telling you for weeks? Schiavone just looks so disinterested in being there. Like, this isn't a new thing. Last night was the icing on the cake of him just like literally hand on forehead. What did we just watch?
You know what
Schiavone's face was? I've been here before.
There you go. I was exactly about to say that. Thank you. And I guarantee you, if we go back to look at WCW footage near 2000, when he's sitting next to like Bobby Heenan and all them, guarantee you he made that same look. You will find footage of him making the same look. One of the things that I loved about AEW and what they were doing in 2000 for the first 4 years, maybe five, is that they were doing things right for the business. And the fact that Tony Schiavone agreed to be there, you guys got to remember, Tony Schiavone quit wrestling. He quit wrestling because he found it to be too toxic. He came back because he was convinced that these guys are doing the right thing and they want to do right for the business. And for the first four, five, maybe years, he was enjoying wrestling again. And you saw this face. This is the face that you never want to see Tony Schiavone have. And that's a testament. So it should be based on Tony Schiavone's happiness as to whether this company is in a good road. And that face that he made after that segment was all you needed to know. Like, I mean, I am worried. I'm hoping that they find peace, that I hate to say this term. I really hate this term now because it's being said too much. You know, give them grace type of thing. Which is like, yeah, I see the look on Boris's face right now. It's like, yeah, that's a piece of crap. But
I agree with you. But
I mean, no. I'm talking about the give them grace thing. The minute I say, like, oh, I hate that. But
oh yeah.
They need to find their peace, and they need to. They're making too much money and losing too much money at the same time for them, and opportunities to make money by just making it personal. Wrestling right now, we're like, put it like this. When I was at Wale Mania, the one takeaway from Wale Mania that you got to understand was that it was celebrating wrestling. AEW stars were there. WWE stars were there. Indie stars were there. And we were all enjoying wrestling. They were all enjoying it together. That's what we should be doing. And even though there is a competition, it should be treated like a competition. Like Triple H shouldn't be coming at people's neck. Tony Khan shouldn't be coming at people's neck. Just do your thing and let the fans be the decision for themselves. It's becoming a sophomoric environment again. And this is when wrestling's become, you know, this is the part that where wrestling stops being fun. And I empathize with Tony's look on his face, whether he admits it or not. Body language, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Here's an interesting one. So according to Wade Keller, will Ospreay nor the Young Bucks were in favor of doing what they were told to do on last night's AEW Dynamite.
Whoa.
Wade says that the airing of the Wembley footage wasn't the Bucks' idea, nor were they in favor of airing it. Ospreay's grind promo was an idea presented to him earlier in the day. Wade said, from what he heard, no one was in favor of doing either of these, and morale right now, this morning, isn't so great.
For those who don't know who Wade Keller is, he is one of the most established reporters in wrestling. Like, he's legit. Like, he is one of the best sources out there.
That's why I stopped the show when I'm reading this, and I needed to read it out, because if Wade Keller says this.
Yeah. Wade Keller, Mike Johnson, Meltzer, to that extent, like you get that inside information from them, they most likely got it from source.
Probably got it from Shivani.
I wouldn't put it past.
Like, let's be honest, like old school, like, you know, you almost know where each person gets their news from if you know
exactly
how long they've been in the business and who their friends were at certain points in time.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. That's awesome.
Damn. Well, there you go, right? Like, you honestly, Dax, you're like winning a lot today. Like, I have so little to add from this. I wish that we were in a point where power, the decision makers to air this, had a little, you know, voice telling them no, whether that voice was in their brain or an actual person telling them, hey, maybe this isn't the best, and maybe that was happening. Maybe that decision maker who decided to put this on air is just that angry, upset about everything.
Yeah,
but
I hate to say it, but like, I'm not a, you know, we both work in corporate. I've worked in corporate for years. You work in corporate currently. I hate staff retreats. I hate staff retreats. We used to try to find ways to get out of staff retreats a lot.
I know no one from work listens to this. I fucking hate hanging out with people from work. Like, it is the most horrendous thing I can humanly imagine, is being forced to hang out with people that you work with.
Obligated.
If you will. And let's be honest, like, on, like, when I worked at BlackBerry, like, there was two groups, the young group and then the older group. The young group I did get along with, but sometimes we were forced to like co-mingle and stuff, and you felt forced that you had to go out for those Friday night drinks because optics, as I like to say.
Yeah, for you it was your staff. For me, it was just the subject matter that was going to be covered. It was like, oh, we got to get into groups and we got to do this.
Kumbaya.
Okay. In this sense, these bastards need a staff retreat. Because, like, they need an HR that they need outsourcing HR. They need a whole bunch of things going on of what is the best thing to do in case of a situation. He needs PR. Tony needs a publicist by his side. Like, there's just certain things you just don't do. I don't care if this is the wrestling business. You just don't do this. Don't address this.
Don't. Yep. I'm just like, I don't know, man. I'm trying so hard not to sound so negative on this show, man. But like,
it's hard. They're making it hard
out of AEW. So I'll be 100% honest with you. After the FTR, after the Okada match, I had to walk.
You just zoned out.
I had to completely walk away.
Look, I'm gonna say you could disagree with me if you want, but I'm gonna speak for Boris right now. Where I say I appreciate what Tony Khan has done for this industry, what he has done to revitalize wrestling, and what he's done to light a fire in WWE's ass to get him to this point. That should be not denied by anybody. We've said it before. Ariel Helwani's recently said it before. Other people have said it before. We're not going to discredit Tony Khan and AEW and the Bucks and Cody for what they have done for this business by bringing AEW to light. We want to keep AEW going around, because if AEW stays, then WWE keeps WWE on their ass. If AEW go, and I'm speaking to all of you fans that are listening, and spread this around, because this need, it can't, tribalism can't be a thing, because if you don't enjoy all of it, and this is the part where I'm talking about listening to history. Last time WWE dominated a promotion, they became the main force of the ideology of this industry. And that was a bad thing for the business. And you saw what happened to WWE leading on when they had no real competition. Look what happened when they did have competition with WCW. Look what happened when they had competition with, you know, AEW. Hell, look what happened when they had competition with TNA and Ring of Honor, for God's sake. It litified, whenever they have competition, it lights WWE's ass and they produce better. We need to celebrate it all.
Also, I think the demise of Vince McMahon and his ego had a lot to do with that.
Big right? thing to do with it. But it allowed Triple H and them to be able to do the things that they know they could have done to get to this point. Because with his mindset and everything that was going on, it was his ego was crushing their company.
Yep.
And without it, it was like, okay, now we could do what we need to do. And then also because this company is literally doing what we want to do, but, you know, and getting the chance to do it. We want to do that too and get it. So now we're seeing it. But I believe that there needs to be, yin and yang needs to be flowing.
Don't bring yin and yang into this. They don't deserve to be brought into this.
Oh, yin and yang is infinite, bro. You can't stop it.
All right, let's move on. FTR. You know what I did like about, and I know a lot of people also kind of clumped the FTR promo into all of this. I will say that FTR said and did what we were all thinking. They come out, they're pissed off. They said they're tired of this. They said that essentially they're going to prove to the Bucks that they are the best tag team in the world. And the Bucks have something up their ass because they are not the best. FTR is now. Boom. Great. Honestly, that
professional.
Was only thing that FTR could have done, and I feel so bad for FTR being put in the position to
of their friends
follow that up, and that was a decision that was made by someone to force FTR to go out there right after this and almost bury the guy, but you know that they chose not to.
Yeah, agreed. Well done.
Brian Danielson video airs Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay comes to the stage and addresses the rumors that he is afraid of the grind, even though he did admit that he doesn't want to work a full schedule and he's looking after his short schedule and wants other aspirations, but he's not afraid of the grind. He says, he goes through his resume and says he's all passion. Ospreay, of course, has to take a shot at Triple H and says he was grinding on the boss's daughter, and that's why he's in the position he's in. Ospreay then finally, thank God, turns his attention to Danielson and says that he is looking forward to his match against Danielson, and he says he will not be able to call himself the best until he beats the best, and that's Danielson. Ospreay says AEW is where the best wrestle. Man, this is sounding more and more like WCW every day.
It really did. This was a very WCW episode.
You know what? Okay, so what I was going to say a while ago was this entire episode of Dynamite was like a rap response to WWE that just didn't land.
How about that?
Was this like the Meek Mill of no, this was the
No, this is Wale versus what is the recent one? Wale versus it is Meek Mill and Wale right now.
It is
right
Meek
now.
Mill, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they beef there. They're beef, recent beef right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. It is just stupid. It's too many. You know what it is too? It's too much beefing. Comedians are beefing now. Rappers, well, they always did every so often. That's normal because part of the culture is okay. You got to back and forth each other. Oh, no. It's not Meek. It's not. Yeah, it's Molly. It was Wale and Meek, but it's also J. Cole and J. Cole and Drake. And Kendrick right now. So that's the recent deal.
Just put them in a ring together. That's all we need to do. Yeah. You know what gets me the most about all of this? This is my last statement about all of this. That is Tony Khan has said so many times, let's just love wrestling. Tribalism sucks. The fuck do you think all of this is going to do?
What? Yeah.
TBS champion Julia Hart talks about her match with Willow Nightingale and says she will turn her smile into a frown. And she's going to, and she says her destiny, well done, Julia, is to keep the title and the house always with. This is fucking awesome.
She is, people, please give her more credit. Because if you watch Julia way back during the dark era and now, she is evolved so much. Era. She has become her own person. Like, it still amazes me to see that this cute little girl has become this, you know,
hot little
this
wench.
she's power, man. She is power now.
To borrow a word from JR, she's become a Jezebel, a Delilah.
Yeah, exactly. She is owning it, man. And I love it. I really appreciate her craft and what she's done with this character. Almost to the point, like, she needs to be this character all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what she will do after this that is going to top what she's done as the princess of the Dark Order.
When the entire House of Black minus Brody King goes to WWE.
She's going to have to be the Undertaker of the company at this point.
She's got the hat. I still haven't seen that in Create.
There's a hat similar. There's a hat without the design pattern that you could use.
Naomi wearing a hat, one of those type of hats, I can see that coming very soon.
Here's the thing. There is a hat that may match it. If you start using, I can see design, like if I designed like the actual, you know, the stained glass patterns that they cut out within the hat. Mm-hmm. I can create that and really actually create that hat in there. So they do have a hat that's similar to that, but it's not the exact one that's made by 2K. But you can work your way into that.
Yep. All right. Chris Jericho. Hook. Versus Shane Taylor promotion. I love seeing Shane Taylor promotions. I like this iteration of Shane Taylor promotions. I even like Anthony Ogogo with them. All right. Long story short.
Go ahead, but yeah, I'll say my piece afterwards.
Shibata boots Jericho. Jericho and Hook, they squabble it out there. Moriarty slams Shibata and gets the pin.
Which is awesome. I love the fact that Shane Taylor promotions won. Yes, I love that. My issue with Ogogo, I actually do like Ogogo. Don't get it twisted. I like him as a personality. No-no? There you go. I like him as a person. Like, he was a commentator for Dark before he started coming in here. He actually is a pretty good commentator. When he used to be with the Big Show and all that, he was a pretty good commentator back then. I really like he's a real sports dude. I dig that. He still hasn't really honed in the wrestling aspect yet. Even when he came in last week.
He got screwed.
Yeah.
After the Cody thing, they had to take him off TV, right?
Yeah, exactly. But he came back doing a run-in, and his run-in didn't really look that devastating. He looked like he was holding back.
Doesn't want to kill people.
Well, I mean, yeah, but some of the moves, he was doing forearms and all the stuff.
I think
he's still
afraid. I think it's a confidence thing where he doesn't want to, you know, go all in with his punch, pun intended.
I mean, I don't know. I think he's a great personality, but we'll see how. Hopefully, being around them, he can learn something from them, because those two are really good, Shane Taylor and they're really good at what they do. Maybe this is good for him. So we'll see. But he's a good heel personality. I do like him as a heel.
Hook and Jericho continued to argue. Hook tells Jericho to get out of here, and he does. Hook checks on Shibata. That part I did like.
Backstage, Renee Paquette
says Samoa Joe is cleared, so his match with Dustin Rhodes is still on. Rhodes delivers an excellent promo, and he gets all fired up talking about grit, work ethic, and he hypes the main event really well.
As Dustin always does. He's a Rhodes.
Okada versus Cristiano Argento. Okay, I'm just going to jump into Okada wins, obviously. I'm going to jump into this. So I sent Dax a message yesterday. I'm like, why the fuck is Okada wrestling a jobber? You said exhibition. I get it. But here's my issue with this.
Yes.
Cristiano Argento could have easily been any one of the 100 of wrestlers currently employed by AEW, and it would have been perfectly fine. It was the fact that it was an absolute unknown, unnamed person that bothered
me. He's an indie guy from that area.
That's great. Still, you have how many hundreds of people on contract who do not make TV? That's my issue.
It wasn't the exhibition issue.
Aspect of the of it.
Okay.
It was more, who is this guy?
Because you didn't explain it.
I know, I was going to, but I'm like, we're going to save it for the show.
Okay. All right. Good. I was about to say, you're way more elaborate than you were during our text. But yes, I agree with that. I agree. If it's just based on the opponent, yes. But I thought it was going to be based on the fact that it was a jobber match.
No. I'm always cool with someone just getting squashed. I like a good squash.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, okay. And that, I totally agree with you on that note.
Yeah, and I know, like, dude, I just sent one message and I was literally typing this whole thing. I'm like, we'll just talk about it.
I'm like, because I was like, wait, I'm used to this. I used to watch NWA, like, Crockett matches when they used to do this.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You have hundreds of wrestlers already signed. People who aren't making TV. Yeah, that makes more sense. Come on, man. Come on.
Anyways, I mean, that goes along with the other situation that, you know, of him firing certain people.
Yeah.
Like,
Maybe everyone else signed on the roster had travel issues.
We never know. But, you know, you're protecting them a lot more than usual.
I know. I that was a joke about, you know, the boys being fired because of their travel arrangements.
Yeah. AEW recent. I hope we go back like a year from now and this is all different. I swear. I hope so too.
After the match, Okada calls out Pac, accepts the challenge. Young Bucks are out. FTR's out. Okada and the Bucks beat everyone up. That's all there is.
I did like Okada's enjoyment of it though. Like I never seen this part of Okada and him being so like smug. Looks like he's having so much fun doing this.
I like his smugness.
Right. Like, his body language speaks volumes in a lot of ways.
Bullet Club Gold, now known as the Bang Bang Gang, talk about winning their waiting ways. White says he feels like beating Billy Gunn up again, but Gunn wouldn't survive, so he's going to face someone else. Thunder Rosa comes to the stage for a toast with AEW Women's Champion Toni Storm. Storm eventually throws some champagne in Rosa's face, attacks her while also wiping the paint off Rosa's face. Deonna Purrazzo runs in for the save.
It was cool. I'm not a fan of this recent Tony. Not Tony Storm. This recent
Thunder Rosa.
I feel like she's lost a little bit of luster what she had before she got injured and left. I don't know. Hopefully it'll get better. She's a different version of herself.
Anna Jay versus Mara May. Not much to this match. Anna Jay takes the advantage. Murray May comes about right back. She does a sneaky, cheeky roll-up for the win.
I've said, I'm slowly loving the slow burn of Mariah May. She's really starting to, she's really starting to, you know, adapt and warm up to the environment, if you will.
Jay attacks May after the bell, and then Stardom's Mina Shirakawa runs in for the save. She has a champagne, gives some of that champagne to Mariah May, and it goes in for the smooch.
And I need to watch Stardom more often now.
You do. Trust me.
Wow. My only issue with that is that I don't think the crowd knew who she was. So they gave her the big music, run it. Yeah, they gave her the music, run it. I think just let her run in without the music. It would have been fine. But I think Tony made it bigger than what it was should have been. And he's done that before. Just let her come out without the run-in.
Stardom fans in attendance.
Right.
And I see that as a Stardom fan. Like,
I mean, I think just let her do the run-in without the big presentation. It would have been fine.
Yeah.
Because people still would have been like, who the hell is this? And wow, who the hell is this?
I love how I know exactly what you meant. All right. Mercedes Moné
is not ugly.
Mercedes Moné is interviewed. She explains why she's going after the TBS Championship, finally. Her first match is going to be at AEW Double or Nothing. Moné then gets emotional as she reflects on her injury in her match against Nightingale last year. But she says she's got a plan. The lights go out, and when they come back up, Moné is on the floor because someone attacked her. I'm saying attack with quotation marks because I think this is all bullshit. I think that this is her plan.
Yeah. Either way, I love this segment because this is like the best I've heard of her so far.
Yeah.
It's a little bit off and on for the first few weeks of it, but like this one was like, okay, she feels a little bit more established into the environment now.
Yep. Which is understandable. It takes a while, people, to get acclimated into their new environment, into new work styles, into new everything. Production people, directors, writers, writer, whatever. Exactly. AEW World Championship Eliminator match, a Samoan named Joe versus a Rhodes. This is a great
match.
This was a good show. This was, good match. This was not a good show. This was a good match. Joe dominates.
Put the drink down, Boris.
I wish I was drinking. Samoa Joe dominates as he should. Dustin Reynolds comes back as he should as a established babyface. But Joe eventually gets the win. Rhodes hits a crossroads for a two count. But the referee isn't looking. Joe hits Dustin with the title for the win. Joe attacks Rhodes after the bell. Swerve runs in, continues to attack Joe from earlier. Swerve grabs a chain, punches Joe, but Joe makes an escape. The two are separated. Joe holds a title. And that's that.
I mean, overall, good, really good way to go out of this show. It's just overshadowed. This whole entire show can be algebraic in a sense of what I said before. Positive times negative equals a negative. There was a lot of positive segments to this show, but it was overshadowed by this stupid, senseless sophomoric rivalry that we're having here that shouldn't have been on TV. And it ruined the episode.
It did ruin the episode for me.
And it overshadowed a lot of big storylines that we should be focusing on. Because nobody's talking about those stories. Nobody's talking about Swerve. Nobody's talking about Moné. Nobody's talking about, you know, the Bucks. And nobody's talking about this pay-per-view right now. That's a sad reality.
Oh, I'm thinking and talking about the pay-per-view. Thanking God that we're not doing the after party.
Oh, God, yeah. Agreed. Good luck, fellas.
Good luck, Grants. Mind you, it's going to be a great pay-per-view. You know it. You know it.
It will eventually. And again, short attention society that we live in right now. This is going to blow over. It's just we're living in that moment of, Jesus. Seven more days to another episode? Let's hope it just goes away. If it doesn't go away, I'm a John Jones him.
You're going to bully Ray him? No, that's Alex Jones.
How about that? Look, how about that?
I've been... Per Wade Keller at PW Torch, I've been checking with, these are direct quotes, by the way, now. I've been checking with people in AEW, and I have been told that this was not something the Bucks were in favor of doing. It wasn't their idea. It was Tony Khan's idea that he wanted this out there. Keller continued, they also had Will Ospreay go on camera, interviewed by Renee Paquette on the stage. The first part of his promo was him addressing a comment that Triple H said on the podcast, alluding to Will Ospreay being someone who didn't want to be part of the grind. Keller said the promo wasn't Ospreay's idea, and I quote, I'm also told that this was an idea presented to Ospreay. I don't know about Ospreay's enthusiasm for or against it, but it wasn't something he did on his own. He didn't wing it. It was something that hours before the interview took place was proposed to him. That's what I'm hearing from AEW.
That's really not good. I need him to, like I said this before, but I need him to go back and rewatch his work from 2019 to 2022 and just really remind himself of all the right things he was doing. Yeah. And what in contrast of what he's doing now, because it is a huge contrast.
It is big time. Dax, sorry to cut you off. Sorry to cut you short. Tell us where to find all of your work. Take it home.
All right. Check out my episode, or my show for that matter, of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the podcast. It is a show that caters to all things anime, comics, movies, and games. You can check that out on talktimelive.com and wherever podcasts are played.
Thank you for that, Dax. As always, thank you so much for listening to the show. We have a very fun show. Some cool new things coming up this week. Just remember, you can join the family over at the Patreon, patreon.com/SNMEradio, chopped-tees.com for all of your SNME merch. And there's more than just SNME. You get Post Wrestling, Poison Rana, and so much more. Dax, as always, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun. My throat is really hurting right now. It's been fun. It's always fun. He's Dax. I'm Boris. Till next time, stay tranquilo.